Welcome to the Mandalorian Podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial podcast for the Outer Rim. My name is Matt, and joining me in the co-pilot seat is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here we are, just 1 week away from liftoff of The Mandalorian on Disney Plus.
Yes, so excited for that launch of Disney Plus on November 12th. At least, Pete, here in these United States, a lot of questions, consternation online. What time will it launch? Pete, it's almost like I wish Disney Plus had a live countdown on their website and the ability for, you know, math to be done. When will Disney Plus launch? At what time of the day?
Well, given the countdown that is in the email, Matt, ticking down as I check it right now, sent at 2:06 p.m. today on November 5th, 6 days, 9 hours, 19 minutes, and 20 seconds.
So that indeed is a 6 a.m. launch. I wouldn't be completely surprised if, like, that happens to arbitrarily be changed to somewhere closer to the middle of the night. But that countdown has been pretty standard amidst the countdown for a while now. Pete, apparently you got the email today. Other people got the email from Disney Plus. I want to say, as somebody who didn't sign up as fast as you or didn't sign up for the 3 years, I didn't get my email yet. I don't know about our listeners, but Pete, you're a have, I'm a have not. Won't the mouse make me happy?
Well, listen, the deal, the 3 years that I think it amounted to like $3.14 a month was entirely too good to not prepay. And we know the price is only going to go up as the streamer further establishes itself. I mean, I just read an article before we went on the air. There are people seriously discussing whether Disney should be broken up as a monopoly at this point, what with Star Wars and Marvel and the Fox acquisition and everything else. But I mean, this is a landmark occasion to launch this streamer. We have never had a Star Wars live action show in 42 years of the franchise's existence, despite probably a billion scripts from Rick McCallum at this point.
Yes, we need a counter to keep track of the Star Wars Underworld scripts that Rick McCallum presumably still cashing paychecks for as he writes there. I will mention, just as a side note, Pete, a little surprised to hear that people perhaps somewhat seriously are considering Disney a monopoly. I am the farthest one in the world from being interested in, you know, CNBC or the financial section of what used to be called newspapers. But being a fan of entertainment news, I come across my fair share of entertainment news, business news. Also read a couple of books on the history of Disney that kind of got into the business end of things. All I know is this, Pete, that Fox merger, it needed approval from the Department of Justice, and it got it. Now, might there be some problems with the executive branch? Pete, that's a different podcast. That's not a Fantastic Geek joint there. But all I know is it got anti-monopoly approval already. I don't know. I guess people haven't done their due diligence there. But hey, sometimes clickbait be clickbait.
Yeah, and you know, so much out there in the zeitgeist. It's really becoming ever-present, this launch happening within a week. I can't believe we are finally almost there. The entire first episode of The Mandalorian will not screen for critics. There was a 27-minute segment that was made up of multiple episodes. Apart from the outlets that they've chosen to give certain exclusives, like yesterday's announcement.
Pete, we'll get to that announcement in the moment, but certainly you're painting a picture where everything is A-okay. It's going to be a perfectly fine launch. Pete, I have concerns that things aren't okay and there's going to be disaster. Where is my app? Where is my Disney Plus app for my phone? Where is it for my streaming TV, for my Fire Stick? Side note, my faux concern, actually not that faux, but my faux concern aside, not expected to launch on Fire Stick devices. That is not a joke. That has been reported in multiple places. Maybe it gets fixed in the next week, but if they were to launch today...
Competitor, though, with Amazon now, I mean, you jump in this game and, you know, we've seen the back and forth, the cooling with Netflix and Disney. And this is for keepsies now. And if it's got to be that way, it's got to be that way. You know, we've just seen the first casualty of the stream wars, Matt, what with PlayStation View, you know, all six people that were subscribed to that streamer shuttering or making the decision to shutter in early 2020. So there's going to be this contraction period after the great expansion of the stream wars.
For these streamers to continue, they need massive corporations behind them. They need massive libraries. They need a massive pipeline to feed the streamer. That's Disney. That's Pete, Viacom, CBS. I know over on our Star Trek podcast, we've taken some dings for CBS All Access, but with the merger of, or the re-merger of Viacom and CBS, I would dare say, you know, Pete, here we are, the financial section again, but I would say they're pretty good. You know, somebody like AT&T and Warner, I don't know. It's like $150 billion that they're in the hole for that whole thing. You know, it's going to be the little ones first. 10 years from now, does the landscape of Hollywood look different? It just might, but I think that 10 years from now, we will still be looking at Disney Plus. We will still be looking at whatever the intended run was for The Mandalorian, whether it's the 2 seasons, 5, 10, whatever it is. I think that Disney Plus and The Mandalorian will be okay.
I think Disney Plus, CNN, Warner will be just fine against Netflix, Amazon come 2028.
Oh, merger wars. Well, at least, Pete, we did have some Mandalorian-only news that happened just in the last couple days. What was it?
That, of course, being the character that Ming-Na Wen of another show that we podcast, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., being named, being glimpsed in this, you know, glorified commercial that Vanity Fair had the exclusive on yesterday.
Yes, she's playing the character of Fennec Shand. Fennec, of course, taking some cues, at least as a word, from the Fennec Fox. And a little bit of that working into the character, at least according to Ming-Na Wen. The ponytail, the braid, kind of looks kind of rather fox tail like. Also, of course, foxes, you know, not the biggest, not the smallest, but smart, scrappy, vicious if needed, and all of that seeming to inform the character.
There had been so much speculation. Is she playing Ahsoka Tano? Is she playing Sabine Wren? Is she doing a motion capture character? Is it just a voice? It's a brand new character, as it should be. You know, the strength in Star Wars lies in that diversity, the difference of the characters. And to give a Disney legend, Matt, newly minted in Ming-Na Wen, rightfully this place in the Star Wars franchise, long overdue.
Well, and she added that she will be arriving mid-season. It's an 8-episode season, so not exactly sure when that will be. Pete, that only makes me all the more astonished. I think that certainly my assumption, maybe yours, from when it was announced at D23 that she was going to be on the show, my assumption was, oh, she shows up in 108 for a couple of scenes and then says, all right, Mandalorian, maybe we'll fight more next time. Season 2, coming November 2020. The notion, for however long her run is going to be, still could be the one episode, but the fact that she shows up mid-season, I have to admit, I'm surprised, if only because that means she snuck over to the Mandalorian set while, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff was going on.
There will continue to be more tales of how this show was filmed and the way that it happened. in particular, Matt, the people they invited on set, you know, droid builders like they've done with Force Awakens and Last Jedi, and then going so far as to invite cosplayers who very dedicated to the creation of stormtrooper armor and things like this. So really a coalition of creators. But then when you think of how they've managed to keep this quiet, this with crazy paparazzi style photos of sets of filming, and even now as season two is filming, continue to see that kind of stuff.
Well, you mentioned that she's playing, of course, a new character, despite speculation earlier to the opposite there. That's in line with what Dave Filoni had said at the Mandalorian press conference, that he, and kind of speaking on behalf of the team, he's really focused on creating new characters and great characters that are more than just set up for or miraculous appearances by the old characters.
Yeah, and Filoni is a guy moving over, obviously, from the animated side to the live action side, you know, arguably the most successful hand in Star Wars TV there's ever been, from Clone Wars and Rebels. And now to get his opportunity to do the live action, to do it with that hand in the past and the hand towards the future, that the thing that the Clone Wars did well, despite dealing with, you know, what we are increasingly told are legacy characters, was bringing in the new, was taking us to places we have never been. And that's something that with The Mandalorian, this 5-year period after Return of the Jedi, really a re-Wild Wild West for the franchise, going to give an opportunity to breathe.
Well, and Favreau had mentioned that he enjoyed adding some of the canon references, I almost said characters, canon references and legends references to the series. Makes me wonder, Pete, you know, for a lot of people, ourselves included, you say 5 years after Return of the Jedi, immediately taken back to that Zahn trilogy that in a certain sense kind of kicked off Star Wars post Return of the Jedi, not just in terms of story stuff, but just like, oh wait, there could be more, there's more in these books, it's a trilogy of books, it's like more movies, which then turned into more movies, etc.
And as the guy who brought Thrawn into what is now considered canon again, after, you know, those Thrawn novels were in the early 1990s after a fallow period, you know, Star Wars went away, came back in books. And then, you know, after Jurassic Park, we had the announcement that they would move forward with the prequels because now the technology existed. To take a great character like Thrawn and plop him into the animated TV show, you wonder who might pop up at what point. But again, wise in that these are cameos and it's not strictly constructed around Ahsoka or Sabine or whomever they might choose from previous or even stories that occur later.
Yeah, I think, and a little spoiler alert here for the other Star franchise, but I think of the strength of the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 finale that, among other things, also set up, hey, Spock, find somebody who is your opposite and who can, you know, who can make you the best person you can be. You know, hint, hint, that's Kirk one day. Oh, wow, Spock backstory for why he's friends with Kirk. I think that there's times, whether it's Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever, there's times that works, and there's times where you really need to be doing your own thing. And you know what? At the end of the day, this is Star Wars. It's the leftovers of the Empire. It's, you know, there's going to be a reference to a light stick. There's going to be, you know, things of that sort. Star Wars is a little bit less changeable than, say, the MCU, where you can go, you know, Space Bro, or you can go Magic Doctor. So Star Wars already isn't super changeable to sit and say, it's going to be that familiar universe with kind of familiar stuff, but new characters, that's definitely the way to go.
Yeah, and one of the things that came out of this press conference as well was some of the directors for season two.
Yes, it's definitely been 100% confirmed publicly by the PR police or whatever that Carl Weathers is definitely directing the episode for season two. At the press conference, there was kind of this, you know, idea that, quote unquote, maybe that guy, Dave Filoni, and this guy, Jon Favreau, would direct as well. And that was met with, obviously, a positive take there. Not a huge surprise, given how Filoni had his live-action directorial debut for season one of The Mandalorian. Favreau then, like, looked off stage and said, can we mention more people? And you heard that, like, off mic, like, no, no. No.
Yes.
And that's when Favreau, you know, said, that's it for now. But I mean, three out of what presumably would be six or seven or eight. I know a couple people doubled up episodes for season one.
Greg Grunberg, who is J.J. Abrams' childhood friend and plays Snap Wexley in the current trilogy of films, he has teased some kind of news. He's waiting for the PR people to sign off. It'd be interesting to see if he has not done any directorial work to my knowledge, but maybe he's a guy that they're potentially considering for season two. Maybe that was part of what he's talking about, or it could be a book thing.
Well, certainly all of these directors for season one and season two met with the dynamic shooting space that The Mandalorian has, this groundbreaking thing that Jon Favreau has had a hand in implementing. Basically this giant LED cage where you can project backgrounds, and apparently the backgrounds can move as the camera moves, move in relation to the camera and things like that. In my head, I'm kind of stuck on the LED cage built for Gravity, the movie Gravity, which was meant to more project light than actually be a background. So
actually, it was meant to make people motion sick. That other effect that you're talking about was coincidental.
So like in my head, it's this thing that looks not great, in part because we haven't seen either behind the scenes footage of it working at its best or working the way it does, you know, with The Mandalorian and certainly Gravity X number of years old at this point. But in my mind, it looks lousy, but Favreau continues to talk it up, and I have no doubt that it's going to be this incredible way to quickly take you to a place on a set.
Yeah, and when you consider, too, Favreau's process as he was doing this, you know, kind of chicken or the egg, and then the egg somehow eats the chicken.
Yes, some fascinating behind-the-scenes stuff as he spoke about the creative process. He would write a script, then send it to get conceptual art. He would see that and then get inspired. It reached a point where he would share a few pages with the concept artist, and then they'd have this, and there'd be something in the background, and he'd say, oh, let's take the story there. And really, really speaking to, you know, this creative process, of which, to be fair, you know, when it comes to The Mandalorian, it's like Favreau is king, Filoni is the prince, but Favreau really kind of speaking to this idea that other people were inspiring him and vice versa. He mentioned all that conceptual art. We'd like to find a place where people could all see it. Pete, if only there was some sort of way that you could print conceptual art together and then sell it to people in like a book.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming, I'm sure, at some point. And then when you bring in Filoni, who is not dealing with animation for the first time, and from my understanding, and again, what we've seen of shooting, these were really down and dirty type of shoots instead of, I mean, we're talking TV, although on an elevated budget, Disney Plus, their linchpin starting off, but really kind of down and dirty shoots. And Matt, when you are not shooting animation, light matters.
Yes, he seemed earnest when he said at the press conference, kind of relaying this anecdote of like, hey, Dave, you need to get this done by 6 o'clock. Oh, why is that? Because the sun goes down. He was like, wait, we lose the light when the sun goes down? This doesn't happen in animation. So if nothing else, I kind of dug his self-deprecating tone for that comment. And certainly, I mean, I was a bit sarcastic before Favreau is the king and Filoni is the prince. I think they would sell it as they are feeding off each other, and Filoni is the one with the George Lucas record. He's the one that's done Star Wars nonstop for the last 10-12 years. And he is steeped in the mythos, and Favreau is bringing this new take, and together there's this synergy. But Filoni did not present himself as co-king of what could be the greatest action TV show ever, or the most beautiful site to ever, you know, be on 4K TVs, which was some, you know, Deadline or Hollywood Reporter comment a number of months ago that it's like the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. He's just there as a guy that's like, hey, I'm learning new things even on this Star Wars TV show.
And long overdue, and glad that he gets a crack here. I fully expect we'll see him in the director's chair of a Star Wars film at some point, particularly now with some of the public shakeup in the last week. We'll get to, why don't we talk about that now?
Sure. As many people probably know, Pete, in the last week or so, Kathleen Kennedy's Lucasfilm officially parted ways with Benioff and Weiss, formerly of Game of Thrones. Some reports suggested that the Mouse House didn't want to share them with their new Netflix contract. Others see it as another high-profile, quote-unquote, parting of ways, firing by the Kennedy camp. What say you, Pete?
So they received over the summer a $250 million development deal with Netflix that gives out those deals like it's giving out candy. You know, they have Ryan Murphy. They have Kenya Barris. They have Shonda Rhimes. They have these, you know, creators they've pilfered from other networks, most notably ABC. But when you consider that they got FX and now they have the guys who did the strongest genre work ever on HBO, squirreling that talent away. And they had signed the deal to do Star Wars back in early 2018. Apparently, they took a trip post Game of Thrones this summer to Italy to actually see George Lucas. There were dual family trips. They took their with them. But they seem to come to a conclusion. Yeah, worried about the fandom, worried about the reaction, the toxicity that's gone along. This, as the end of their show, was not received well by people who made YouTube videos about how it was supposed to end. And they kind of made up their minds, but at the same time, we hear that Disney not really thrilled that they took that deal after they had already committed to Star Wars. It is Star Wars, after all.
I guess a number of thoughts here. First of all, it was Variety that kind of really dug into, oh, they were fired because, you know, Kathleen Kennedy's Lucasfilm is just falling apart, and look at all these people who have been fired before. It's a pattern of mismanagement again. And I will grant you, you know, we've talked before, there have been a number of Star Wars directors fired in the Kathleen Kennedy era. But
and what deadlines have they missed? What film project got so gutted it didn't come out or turn into something? I mean, we're about to podcast a show that is the husk, likely, of Josh Trank's dogs chewing things to pieces during the Fantastic Four shoot in New Orleans. So that doesn't happen. We don't get a Mandalorian. Maybe we get a really bad Boba Fett movie.
Well, I also think, too, I mean, look, there's an anti-Kathleen Kennedy narrative, I suspect largely by fanboys that are concerned that there's a girl in charge of the, you know, in charge of the action figure set. On top of that, you know, I mean, whether it's, oh man, Rey's a female, and that makes me uncomfortable too. but separate from that, A, let's not forget that this streaming thing is no longer a twinkle in someone's eye, whether it's Disney Plus, which, you know, being yet to launch, it has the hopes of being the best thing ever. And as I said before, it's going to simultaneously bring together your childhood, your current life, and your old person life all together in this wonderful, you know, bit of nostalgia and future nostalgia, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, there's an argument to be made that the future is more so with, can we get your $7 a month for 12 months out of the year versus can we get you to pay $10 per Star Wars showing for a Star Wars movie every, best case scenario, year? I mean, or even, Pete, let's look at Marvel. Oh man, the most they've done is 3 a year. I know now with Spider-Man Home Something 3, it'll be 4 in that year. All right, you got $40 out of me for the 4 Marvel movies that particular year. I'm still going to be paying more for Disney Plus at $7 a month. Okay, fine, I did the 1 year for $70. But you understand my point that, like, there's more money to be made out of people paying this fee that you forget than there is, oh, I need to go buy those tickets to go see this thing on day and date. You know, so I think that there's that too. Ultimately, though, I will say, I guess, in defense of the concerns, how about this, Pete? Who made the Benioff and Weiss contract that said, yes, we will totally wait until Game of Thrones is over. That's totally cool. And if you then sign a contract after Game of Thrones, we'll share you. Like, shouldn't it have been, no, Game of Thrones end date, then we exclusively have your services for the next 18 months to at least get Star Wars up and rolling. And then if you want to sign a new contract for $250 million for the next 10 years with Netflix, then we can share you. But how did they sign this, and how was there not somebody on the Disney end saying, you're exclusively doing Star Wars for X amount of time?
And they have a reputation as never having been able to multitask. The only thing they've done being Game of Thrones. And listen, it's a big thing to have done. It's certainly more than I got on my resume. But they made some comments within the last month that kind of got a life of their own, to the effect that, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing with Game of Thrones. Much had been made. Some of the early runtimes of season one episodes were in the 30-minute range, and they had to rewrite and pad some of those to meet the network standard. You know, there's some of the controversy about the content of Game of Thrones in terms of consent and some of those aspects as well that I think were kind of rethought when it came to handing over the keys to the Star Wars spaceship.
I mean, first of all, I should say neither you nor I have any particular animus or concern with Kathleen Kennedy. At the end of the day,
I think Kathleen Kennedy's done a stupendous job. And you look at the box office receipts for these films, and then you look at the critical reactions, not the, oh, my YouTube Snoke theory pancaked in upon itself because I had him as the love child of Palpatine and Mara Jade. But, you know, the actual people who know what they're looking at when it comes to film and story, you cannot argue against what she's produced.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, Solo is the outlier. And I think that Disney's been public enough to say that, you know, what's the saying? Usually success has 1,000 fathers and failure is an orphan. I think Disney has flipped it around, at least on the Bob Iger end. And they've kind of been public by saying, hey, we messed up in a variety of ways here. One was came out too soon. And then, to be honest, I think then they say, and other problems were, because nobody wants to now consider, would the movie have done better if they hadn't fired Lord Miller? Would there then not have been the expensive reshoots? Even if it did the exact same box office, it would have made more money because the reshoots were super, super expensive. I guess we'll never know, but Pete, let's bring it back to The Mandalorian. Let's bring it back to this press conference here. One day, Kathleen Kennedy will no longer be the head of Lucasfilm. Are we looking at a future president or the future co-presidents of Lucasfilm in Favreau and or Filoni?
I think these are creative guys who don't want to give up the hands-on creative process. I don't think they're ticketed for that. I mean, if they're interested in it, it's certainly something that would be considered. But I think they love the day-to-day of film and television production.
I don't disagree, but I will just say this. I'll plant my small flag here. Let's say, you know, again, we're not rooting for Kathleen Kennedy. Oh, be fired so that way Boy can run it. But, you know, she'll eventually retire. The end comes to us all. And, you know, if that phone rings and it's an elderly George Lucas saying, Dave, Star Wars needs you. Star Wars needs you more than directing. You need to run Star Wars. Will you be my emperor?
Well, it's not his call anymore.
Well, but he might be tasked to make the call. You know, whoever's the president of Disney at that point might say.
I don't think so. I think they've, you know, and again, that's part of this false narrative that there was, you know, a campaign that people wanted to bring George back to rescue Star Wars. You know, he sold what he created. He did just fine for himself. He did just fine by the franchise. I also don't remember people saying, you know, what a cinematic masterpiece Attack of the Clones is, because it's not.
And honestly, I think of that. I think of the signing ceremony that, you know, was him signing over Star Wars. I would assume that maybe there was, like, the actual legal thing had happened prior, and that was more the PR thing. But, like, the moment must have come, whether it was, you know, at that desk or behind the scenes or whatever, the moment must have come where it's like, here's the paper, here's the pen, do you sign Star Wars away? And if he had reservations, that was the time to say, wait, I don't want to do this, as opposed to, no, I'm a cash out, and then, not that he's, like, shared public concerns, but, like, you make a decision, you go for it, you don't look back. You know, that's how it goes. That's Star Wars. Sometimes people get left behind. Sometimes tough decisions get made. You know, that's how it goes.
Well, moving forward, Matt, not only are we a week away, but we're just outside of that. We'll have two episodes within the first couple of days.
Yes, episode 101, of course, launching on launch day, November 12th. We're going to podcast it same day, so get your thoughts, get your theories, get your reactions in pretty quickly. You know, it'll be the evening of the 12th when we podcast that. Episode 102 is going to be coming on that Friday, which is Friday the 15th. Pete, that's when we're going to settle into our Star Wars Saturday routine. So episode 102, take some time, digest it. You know, still fairly short order here in terms of getting us your thoughts. Episodes dropping, for the most part, on the Fridays. All our Mandalorian podcasts after the season premiere will be hitting the podcast feed on Star Wars Saturdays. So plenty of time to be having that conversation back and forth.
So wherever you're watching it, whether you're tweeting along, whether you're sending an email or a Facebook, let us know what you thought. And throw those theories our way.
And of course, the entire season of The Mandalorian being podcasted on the backs of the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Pete, our Razor Crest is not maybe as cool as the one that The Mandalorian flies around in, but ours is powered on two things, bandwidth and storage, and that comes at a cost, and we are so privileged to have people helping us along the way by being our Patreon patrons.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content. All it takes is $1 a month to get you in that door, a mere quarter a week for this and the 18 other podcast feeds we have through FantasticGeek.com and Apple Podcasts.
So, Pete, let's keep the Mandalorian conversation at a fervor between now and launch day. How can people be in touch with you to talk about Star Wars?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 10,780 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
facebook.com/fantasticgeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
Pete, the next time we talk Star Wars The Mandalorian, it'll be on launch day. We will have finally seen an episode along with so many other millions and millions of people. With that, I will say adios to all the listeners and give you the final word.
Your name will be legendary.